So I have now got the red pill food revolution author sitting in front of me. This is amazing. And it's contrary to what Graham Atkinson said, not written by Jeremy Ayres, written by Ben Hunt. You, with some contribution from Jeremy Ayres. I just want to make that clear. And Phil Escott and Graham Norbury, right?
Yeah, it was a team effort. But really, really proud of that book.
Yeah, I like the graphic. The red pill and little farm on top of it. It's nice. What made you write it?
Oh, it's the natural outcome of quite a long journey, really. Because we wrote the previous book, The Red Pill Revolution, that came out in 2022, I think, which was about the way that the world is set up. Like, we live in two worlds at the moment. There's the real world of nature, which has always existed and will always exist, and it runs according to natural law. And then there's the world, the man-made world, the world of men, that we call the system, that's overlaid on top of the world of nature, and where it has man's laws. And everything is just subtly changed. And that this is the modern world that we have all grown up in, and that we like to believe is real, and that we're told is real, and that we're educated is real. But the fact is, it's not. And so what we explored in the Red Pill Revolution is kind of a gentle way to take somebody by the hand and say, if you are wondering why the modern life just isn't that satisfying and there's something kind of wrong, but you don't really know what it is, then here are some suggestions, right? What we didn't set out to do is to grab people by the scruff of their neck and shove them face first down the rabbit hole as far as they could go.
So what is wrong? What is not right?
What is not right? Oh, wow, there's so much. put me on the spot now. What is not right is that the world is set up according to skewed. Actually, it's down to economics, fundamentally, which in economics being the study of the distribution of resources. And in nature, everything's abundant. We human beings, wherever we've gone on Earth, we've found all the resources that we ever needed. We could find food, we could find shelter, we could find all the medicines, whether you're in the desert, or whether you're in the tundra, whether you're in the tropic, doesn't matter. Australian outback, doesn't matter. We always had food, water, medicine, everything that we needed, shelter, and that is the way of things. That's the natural law. What the system tries to do, and of course everything is there for everyone all the time. All you needed was tribal law. You needed the knowledge. You needed to learn from your parents and your elders and just go out, and it was all there within the reach of your arm. And that is the kind of Eden mentality. And now some people might say, oh, this is a very romanticized view of tribal life, a prehistoric life. But I think that the picture that we're all painted of celebrities and stuff like that is far more artificial than that. One way to think about it is, and I remember I said this in my talk in January where you were, and we'll talk about that probably a bit more. We are, everyone living today, everyone listening to this or watching this today, Ahmed, is the product of the longest chain of winners ever known to life, because your parents survived to reproductive age, managed to reproduce, and so did their parents and their parents and their parents, going all the way back to the first animals on Earth. So you are an absolute miracle of success. And that just really stands as a testimony to how awesome humanity is and how awesome our home is on Earth. Now, so what's wrong with the system?
The spaceship called Planet Earth is pretty incredible.
It's absolutely
traveling through the cold, dark void of space.
But they don't want you to know that. The system is set up in a way that is not normal, as in it doesn't tend to balance and it doesn't tend to abundance. What it tends to is it uses the Pareto distribution, the 80-20 rule, so that those that have get more and those that haven't struggle.
I'm in the struggling group.
Well, we'll see what we can do about that. Yeah. But and that's the way it was set up. And that all actually goes back, as we explained in the Red Pill Food Revolution, that all goes back to land ownership.
Mm.
And when the last ice age finished and we stopped going out and hunting, because do you know this, that the even like today, modern hunter-gatherer tribes, the average physical exertion that they spend per week is between 15 and 20 hours.
Oh.
Per week.
Is that it?
Per week. Now, I bet you as a junior doctor, or even later on in your career, you were doing that in a day.
Yeah.
You know? But that's all it takes. That's all it takes when you live in the flow of abundance in nature. And what do we have? You know, we have people trying to hold down two jobs, three jobs, just to pay the rent, just to pay the bills. And the point is that the value of what you create in this system is taken away from you, because it's the boss, it's the man, it's the system that gets most of the value. And it's designed in a pyramid format. So it's designed that our life force, 50 years of slogging our guts out, right? The value of that goes up and up the pyramid to a minority. So I'm sounding like Karl Marx now, but there's something in this. And communism tries to address that. But I think the whole left-right thing now is just, it's all tired, because it's all based on the Industrial Revolution, you know, bosses and workers and stuff like that. And that's not really the way that things are anymore.
You know, I watch these, like, period programs like Yellowstone. Right now, I think it's the prequel, 1883 or something like that, and it's showing you what life was like in the Wild West. And you look at the Native Americans, and you think about the Native Americans, and you know, I think of these lean, athletic-looking people, men and women. I think of them as living on the land, with the land. They had no comprehension of land ownership. They thought it was laughable, that the idea that you could own the planet Earth. Like, who are we, you know? But you know, it was all about the symbiosis, this balance, you know, moving with the bison, whatever, hunting them, eating lots of meat, living within the seasons, you know, outdoors, grounded. I mean, they just knew. And we come along with our steam engines and our railways and our guns and our properties, and we fix ourselves to a land and we say, this is ours. And then we pay the tax man. And I just think, and then we're indoors all the time now. We're LED lights, blue lights draining our energy, life force, chronically sick, obese. We never hunt. We never grow our own food. We just get it from packets, fluorescent, brightly colored packets, which are made of basically just a few toxic chemicals, fructose corn syrup and seedols and linoleic acid and E-numbers and preservatives. And I just think, man, those Native Americans, I think they had a much better life. They were more advanced and civilized than us. Us sitting, watching TikTok videos, vaping cherry-flavored vapes, you know, garbage like that. I mean, they had it. They were switched
100%.
On.
At the turn of the, like, 1800, the Plains Indians in North America were in perfect health, and they were the tallest human beings on Earth.
Really?
And they lived on bison, mainly bison, with actually a wide variety of foraged plants as well.
Man, I'm really sorry. I've only got venison burger for you today for lunch, not bison burger. I've never had a bison burger. I'm sure it'd be nice, but yeah.
Venison burger will do. Awesome. Thank you. I'm grateful for everything right now. You know what I mean? And that's really important, you know. But this life that we've been inculcated to expect doesn't revolve around abundance, and really doesn't revolve around gratitude. So that's something that's very important to me right now. And I think that is actually our default state. Gratitude. We should be going through life, when you get a successful hunt, right? When you find the stuff that you need, you slap each other on the back. Everybody's happy. Let's get carving up this carcass, and we're all going to have a feast. It's wonderful. Whereas, what do we have today? And food is so important. And it was actually mind blowing, the whole process of writing this book, because how do people eat today? We food is not, in reality, you know, we're talking about the difference between the natural, the real natural world and the fake world. The reality of food is life.
Mm.
Human existence was about, okay, you sort your shelter out, you've got your tools, your weapons, you keep yourself warm enough, you're safe from monsters. Other than that, life is about getting food. You know, you get clean water, you go hunting, you have a great time, you run around with your mates, and you give thanks for that food, and you give thanks to the spirit of the animal that gave you that food in most cases. Of course, we were opportunistic as well, and we would get calories wherever we could if we had to, but that is really at the center of life. What do we do today? Oh, it's just, I'm going to pop something in the microwave. When it goes ping, I'm going to shove it into my face while I'm watching TV. And then I'm going to snack between meals, and then I'm going to graze between snacks. You had the wonderful Zoe Harcum on a few months ago. One of the Zoe is definitely one of my personal heroes. I'll never forget. Zoe says, unless you are a cow or you want to be the size of one, stop grazing. I think that's beautiful.
Yeah. I love Zoe Harcum. She is incredible, and she's such a good human being. It was so nice when I found out she really liked my podcast, and I was like, oh, that's amazing. That's so cool. Cause I love her. So she's definitely going to come back, hopefully early summer. I mean, this is all nice, Ben, what you're saying about, you know, living with the land and everything. How do we apply it to today's world? Because there's so many people now in the cities and towns. No one's got any land. No one's got a homestead. You know, even my little wee garden here, you know, I've got a few raised beds, a few chickens. It's hard. It's hard, man, for most people. A lot of people live in the cities and apartments. You know, isn't this all just idyllic utopia, but isn't actually practical? Like, what is the solution?
Right. Well, we're not saying that we all need to put on loincloths, grab spears and run out into the hills to hunt large prey.
Oh, damn it.
That's not the, I mean, as fun as that would be. And, you know, one day maybe you and I will do that as a weekend activity. Who knows? But the point, fundamentally, the point is the freedom actually begins in your own mind. And that's what we said in the Red Pill Revolution. It's you change your thinking, you change your life, change your thinking, you change your future. And so, I mean, that's really the fundamental of it, is change the way that we look at ourselves and our place in the world as well. And what we say in the Red Pill Food Revolution is actually putting food and health back at the center of life and the back at the center of family life. I mean, how many families actually sit down and eat together now and talk and eat and sit and digest? I think we should make digestion trendy again.
What do you mean by digestion?
Well, actually giving yourself time to allow your food to go into your cells, go into your body, you know, rather than eating on the go. Eating on the go is a disgrace.
No, know? I get that. You know, it's, I'm not going to name names, but I know someone in my family who eats at the kitchen counter. Bring the mic over to you a bit, because I noticed you like talking, then you stoop. Bring it. It's on a boom.
Got it.
So basically what I was saying was, I know someone in my family who pretty much loves eating at the kitchen counter on the go, watching TV, you know, putting butter on some toast or whatever, cheese on. And I don't know if I'm mistaken, but I've heard that if you eat on the go standing, it takes more to fill you up and get that satiety, like to feel like, yes, I'm full now. And it's not good for you. It's just, you should sit down and enjoy your meal and make it, this is my meal, rather than I'm just on the go, I'm eating, snacking. And then you just snack, you're just constantly snacking. You're just eating, eating, eating. You never feel full up. And then you end up with problems.
Yeah. So we should eat slowly. We should enjoy our food. We should appreciate our food. We should give thanks for our food as we eat. And that also, eating slower helps to release the hormone so that your brain actually knows that you've eaten as well. Like my mate Dave.
What's the name of that hormone again?
Leptin.
I was going to say that. Leptin, yeah.
Leptin is the satiety hormone.
That's it.
That is released by your cells. And when there's enough leptin, when your brain detects the leptin in your blood serum, then it then releases other hormones to say, okay, we're not hungry anymore, we're fine. And the opposite one is ghrelin, is the hunger hormone.
Yeah, but no, but I think you're totally wrong. I think we should all take Ozempic. You know, we should all take Ozempic and just pop a pill and sort the problem and, you know what, lose weight that way. No, I'm just joking. I mean, I think that's the problem. Like today, you know, we have all these problems that are created by society, by corporations and policies. And the solutions, rather than reverting back to nature and preventing those problems, it's further artificial constructs like Ozempic. Mm. You know, what we should do is, like you said, eat slowly. You know, respect our food. Eat the right food. Eat the right food at the right time. I mean, I don't know about you, but I had a major problem with food, like for most of my life. Very guilty relationship with food. I would eat a lot. I would eat a lot of carbs. I didn't value meat. I ate late at night. I couldn't sleep.
That is probably, you know, with your permission, it is probably a reflection of your relationship with yourself as well in that, because the way that we are conditioned now to see food is very similar to, for example, the difference between lovemaking and porn, right?
Expand on that.
Well, it's made cheap, it's made easily accessible, and it's all about those little dopamine hits that you get.
Yeah. Right?
Whereas what we should be doing, what is the appropriate place of the sexual act in life, is it should be enriching, it should be enjoyed, it should be slow, it should, you know, be natural, right? Whereas porn is like, yeah, here's Eternal, bang.
Instant gratification.
Instant gratification. And it's a drug, right? And when you spend your life, you know, I mean, you probably know people who've been addicted to gaming, for example, or gambling, or any of these things. It's all the same pattern, right? The system wants us to be hooked on cheap, but external, exogenous stimulation that gives us that little dopamine hit. But the more dopamine that you experience, as all these little dopamine hits throughout the day, actually reduces your body's ability to make its own serotonin, which is deep joy, deep satisfaction, the appreciation of a job well done. You know, when you feel like, God, life is good. That's not dopamine. Dopamine is, I'm playing a game, I shot that guy in the head. Woof! And that's it. And then it's gone. Then it dissipates. But the more...
So you're constantly chasing it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The more you are addicted to getting those little hits, the less actually deeply joyous you're capable of being.
Isn't there also like a refractory period? Like when you get all these dopamine hits, you get this refractory period where you can't actually get excited anymore and you almost feel dulled.
Yeah.
I mean, do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, you know, people who are addicted to gambling just can't get that high anywhere else. People who are addicted to porn can't enjoy a normal, natural
sexual relationship.
Union. Exactly. Yeah. And food is entirely the same. The food that we are given today, I mean, they figured out in the 1960s the bliss point of food. Right? And Zoe, I learned this from Zoe, because I was at a conference just a few years ago in the southwest of Scotland called the Ethical Farming Conference. Mm. And it was a gorgeous day, great talks. And they served up this food. I got a big plate of meat. And I sat down next to this lovely young couple. And we just started chatting. It was Zoe Harcourt. I didn't know her from Adam, right? And we got talking about this. And she said, I asked her what she did. And she's like a nutrition researcher and writer. And so I started banging questions out. And she said, just wait. I'm like, what do you mean, wait? Anyway, she was giving the keynote speech like straight after lunch as well. So... But yeah, one of the things that she said in that speech, one of the best talks, and you can find it on YouTube, Ethical Farming Conference Session 2. Zoe's is the first half of that video. Amazing. One of the things that she said is that nature provides foods either as protein and carbs, or protein and fat. You very, very rarely find fat and carbohydrates in the same ingredient, right? Where do you find it? You find it in nuts and seeds, avocados, and you find it in milk. which is what mammals provide to nourish their offspring in a very rapid way and get them to grow. So the weird thing is that, and this is all reproductive. Nuts and seeds and avocados and milk are all to do with reproduction. They're all to do with getting as much, persuading an animal to consume as much as possible of the thing in the shortest possible time. And in our evolution, let's say in an ice age, and you come across there's nuts available, the walnuts fall off the trees or the chestnuts fall off the trees at a certain time of year, you'd fill your boots because that also helps you to put weight on, to store body fat, to help you get through the winter, which is a really, really important survival skill. In fact, obesity is a good thing. It's natural. It's there. The problem is that what we are doing right now is that people are in a hyper-accelerated fat storage mode 365 days of the year because we're guzzling down sugar and other refined carbohydrates in combination with fat. Now, if you think about so everything else other than those few things is either protein with carbs or protein with fat. Okay, so protein with carbs is generally what Zoe says is what vegetarians will eat or vegans. Protein and fat is what carnivores will eat. Okay, but if you think about everything that is moorish that you could sit down and just stuff into your face without wanting to stop, it all combines fat and carbs in the same mouthful, right? Pizza is a bread base with cheese and pepperoni or whatever. Chocolate is protein and carbs. Is fat and carbs. Donuts, cakes, cookies, every single thing. And they figured this out in the 60s. And it's called the bliss point. You combine protein and carbs and it bypasses our natural satiation mechanism. Mm. If I was to give you a big bowl of mashed potato with nothing added, you'd have a few bites of that and go, thank you very much, and push it away.
Yeah.
Right? If I gave you a whole pack of butter, you could eat a few bites and then it'd be, look, I've had enough of that, it's fine. If I mix mashed potato and butter together, you can eat that until it comes out of your ears. And that's, they figured this out, and it's because our whole system, our whole economy that we live in is designed to get people to consume compulsively. Whether or not it's good for their health, as we will get onto, I'm sure, whether or not it makes them happy, they don't care because the corporations are in charge and have been in charge for a long time. What do corporations care about? Selling as much crap as possible.
It's all about money. This is where I talk about money and economics in my podcast because it does affect your health. You know, all of these things affect your health. And, you know, if the system is designed for us to basically consume, 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 and corporations to profit, 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 and, you know, in every respect from our misery, basically.
Yeah, and every respect, including health.
Yeah.
So health is now a product, whereas in reality, like in the natural world, health is an endemic right. It is actually our right from not even a human right. It's a right from being a living thing, right? Every creature in creation should enjoy health naturally. And it's a product of dwelling in a natural state in our environment. Where the system gets hold of that stuff, they say, no, we cannot have health being a natural right. It must be something that people pay for. So you get now the pharmaceutical industry and it doesn't even want to make you healthy. This is the key thing.
It wants to make you a customer for life.
Exactly. Exactly. And there are reports out there from financial institutions saying to the pharmaceutical industry, if you find a cure for disease X, whatever it may be, you cannot take it to market because a patient cured is a customer lost. So we don't know how many cures that may exist. I mean, look, we know some, and I'm not even going to mention them right now, but we don't know how many.
What do you mean? Which ones? Cures for what?
Cures for all kinds of. So imagine the most unpleasant and aggressive diseases that, you know, metabolic diseases that you could come across. Case in point.
Diabetes.
Oh, diabetes. That's child's play. Child's play is diabetes is potty training. Yeah, I'm talking about things. Case in point. In 1939, the UK Parliament passed the Cancer Act. The Cancer Act makes it a criminal offence for anybody who is not an oncologist, basically, to say that anything could cure cancer or reverse cancer.
That's really weird. I find that a really weird thing to do. Like, I don't like government interfering actually in any aspect of my life. One, because I don't want to be governed. I want to be left alone. But then, you know, passing these laws, like, why not? Someone wants to say they've found some cancer treatment, anyone, a naturalist, a herbalist, a naturopath or whatever, who cares? Like, great. There shouldn't be a monopoly on anything like this.
Yeah.
Or knowledge.
The money men care. That's the thing. So they have to outlaw that to protect profits, because it's an economy of its own. It's a sector of the economy. And this is why we've set up the War on Health conference. We've done the first one where you spoke. We've got another one coming up in a few weeks' time as well. And that's what we are trying to spread the word about, which is that what we are told is the healthcare system is not a healthcare system at all. And if actually being healthy and happy and walking free upon the earth is of interest to you, then sorry, we have to step up and we have to take responsibility for our own health. And fortunately, there is a heap of knowledge and wisdom out there that we can share. And that's why we've got a conference just for that.
We'll talk about the conference in a second. Mm. So is this true? I was speaking to someone yesterday and they were saying they've changed the sizes on people's clothes so that what used to be medium is now deemed small. What used to be large is now medium. What was extra large is now large. Have you come across it? Because it's really funny. I find I now need to wear extra small stuff to fit. Small is too big for me.
All right.
Yeah. Have you come across this?
No.
It's like they're normalizing obesity. They're normalizing the new body shapes that people have. Like, I don't think it's a minority of people who are obese anymore. I think it's like the majority of people.
Yeah, it's over 40% now. We're getting towards 50% obesity. And obesity is you are overweight to a degree that constitutes a clinical risk. But they did the same with statins. And you know that they came out with statins before they came out with cholesterol being a problem. You know, so you know they found that statins reduce cholesterol and then they decided to create a problem to sell the product. But what they've done with statins is that they've actually kept moving the goalposts. They've lowered the acceptable level of total serum cholesterol.
Yeah, I've heard it.
In order to sell more statins. And I know for a fact that GPs in this country are actually on personal sales targets to get as many of their customers who are over, say, 60 on statins as possible.
Yeah, I've heard this, like that GPs get paid additional money based on how many drugs the percentage of their patients are prescribed certain drugs. I find that bizarre.
Yeah.
So rather than getting paid extra for having more healthy patients, and by healthy, I think the healthiest version of yourself is one that doesn't need any medication. So yeah, you should have no medication. So rather than getting paid for, hey, a lot of your patients aren't on drugs, aren't on medication, aren't needing to come and see you. Well done. You guys are clearly doing a great job. We're going to pay you extra money for this. It's like, oh no, you need to prescribe more drugs and, you know, hit more of these targets. And you could skew it and spin it and say, oh, we're picking up and identifying more problems and treating them. The other way you can look at it is you're making sure that Big Pharma makes a lot of money.
Yeah.
And you're keeping people dependent on these drugs and never actually curing them of their problem, because a pill doesn't cure you.
But remember, Ahmed, that the corporations are in charge. The corporations and the directors of corporations are bound by something called fiduciary duty, which means that they are under a legal obligation to do whatever is in their power to further the benefit of the shareholders. Okay, so if they do anything that is detrimental to the profits of the corporation and therefore the returns for the shareholders, they are individually, potentially legally liable for those losses. Okay. Therefore, if a pharmaceutical company comes out with something that would, say, a pill that would cure cancer, they would be legally prevented from letting it come out to the market. And that's just a for example. Yeah. Do you know how it used to work? How physicians used to work in ancient China?
Yeah, they got paid only when their patients were healthy, and the moment they were sick, they didn't get paid anymore.
Now that,
am I right?
That is good economics, right? That is using the power of money for the betterment of humanity, which is the exact opposite of what we would say.
It's a joke.
It is. It is. and you know, this is the thing. We can laugh at it. We can get angry about it if we want to, but that is going to be counterproductive. What we need to do is we need to say, okay, the world is fracked up. Okay. The healthcare system ain't a healthcare system. Let's just call it what it is. And then we are then empowered to make individual decisions for the good of ourselves and for the good of our families and our loved ones.
All right. Let's talk about this conference, War on Health. Why'd you pick that title, The War on Health? Like, it's not, it doesn't sound like a very positive, you know, motivating kind of like conference name. It's like, oh God, War on Health.
I
like,
know.
Are we waging war on health?
No. We're not waging war. And yeah, I appreciate it. It's absolutely vile, you know. But you, like I say, the first step to recovery is admitting that you've got a problem, and we are in a war on health, and we are the cannon fodder right now in that war. Okay, but like I say, first step to recovery: admit you've got a problem. Let's call it what it is, and then we can say, okay, well, this system clearly isn't set up to keep us healthy or to make us healthy if we lose our health and lose our state of balance, healthfulness. So what can we do? And that's what the conference is about.
So who have you got speaking at this event, and what are they going to be talking about?
A load of quacks like yourself. No.
I am a quack. Quackaroo.
Yeah, I'll be speaking. My business partner Phil Escott, who has a wonderful story, and he's going to be talking about the same title as his best-selling book, Arthritis, The Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me. The guy was crippled 10, 11 years ago. He was crippled with psoriatic arthritis. He had to figure out for himself, because the rheumatologist couldn't help. So he had to figure out for himself how to reverse it. He reversed it. And now he dedicates his life to helping other people to get better.
It's funny. And, you know, when I was going for med school, and even now recently as a doctor, psoriatic arthropathy is a big thing. So psoriasis doesn't just affect your skin. A lot of people don't realize it's quite systemic. It affects multiple organs in your body and can affect your joints and cause arthritis. It's quite crippling.
Yeah.
So it's not just like skin lesions. But the thing is, with all these kind of like rheumatological conditions, we were always told it's autoimmune. And it's autoimmune because your body's attacking itself. The body's gone haywire. The body's gone faulty. The body doesn't know what it's doing anymore. It's just attacking itself. And that was just the reason we were given as doctors as to why you get autoimmune conditions, which I never really was happy with. It sounds so strange. Why would your body attack itself? Like, that's such a bizarre thing. And or it'd be like, we don't know why it happens. We don't know why it happens. It's autoimmune. Your body's killing itself and attacking itself.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
It's just bizarre.
It fails the smell test, doesn't it? Yeah, like, why would your body creates cholesterol, right? 70 to 80% of all the cholesterol in your body is created in your liver out of fats. Why would your body do that if cholesterol was a bad thing? Your body creates LDL particles to carry cholesterol and fats and triglycerides around your body. Why would LDL be a bad thing? Right. So it's all perverted. Everything that's good, we're being told is bad. Why? So that they can keep selling us the products. They create a problem so that they can sell the solution. And that's all it is. And you know what? You can have that as evil if you want to have it as evil. I don't think that's a good use of our energy, to be honest. I think just, like I say, call it what it is, and then we can move forward. And it's much, much better to move forward together.
Okay.
As a community of free-thinking human beings.
So you've got Phil Escott talking about how his problem was the best thing that ever happened to him and how he overturned it. Who else have you got?
Andrew Scarborough will be there. Andrew basically was handed a death sentence 11 years ago. after being diagnosed with a super aggressive brain tumor that they said was would basically kill him. And he's still here, and he's going to be talking about how he died 11 years ago.
Wow. You know, do you know what? The big bad C, and I'm not talking about COVID, I'm talking about cancer here. That's like the thing that puts the fear of death into people. Just bring the mic closer to you so you don't need to bend down. Just pull it up. So basically, people are quite terrified of that. And I understand why, having seen my dad die of cancer in 2018. It was horrific. And the worst of the cancers, I think, for most people is like a brain cancer, right? Because like it's just, that's the, like the worst possible diagnosis you can get. And the fact that this guy's still walking and talking 10 years later, pretty incredible.
Yeah. And he's now dedicated his life to researching other cancers as well. So incredible story. Incredible inspiration. What a guy. I've heard Andrew speak before. I've met him before. Yeah, it's absolutely wonderful. Who else have we got?
I'm gonna be kind of like interviewing him like a live podcast on the stage. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it'll be fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes, we've got Dr. Sarah Pughes coming back. She was there in January as well. She describes herself as like a quantum biologist. She's going to be talking about why hospitals are the worst places to heal. And she's also with a particular kind of angle on quantum cardiology. Mm. So make of that what you will. But, and here's the thing, you know, one of the fundamental issues, in fact, one of the big lies that we've been sold is that the human body is a machine and machines malfunction. And when certain bits break, you can just rip them out and throw them in the bin or whatever. We're a lot more subtle than that. And we are part of...
Subtle, or are we a lot more sophisticated?
Both. Yeah. And it's not just this, you know, these... A set of discrete mechanistic parts either, but we are part of our environment. We're part of this human species, this community. And yeah, we really need to come up with a much more grown up way of appreciating health and appreciating what we actually are, because we are like great word, you know, we're far more sophisticated than, you know, we're not just stock units. We're not just livestock, as the system wants to treat us. Yeah, I really fundamentally believe that people are a damn sight more powerful and beautiful than we are allowed to believe.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I had Sarah Pugh sitting in your seat last week. Dr. Sarah Pugh, she was amazing.
She's wonderful. Love it a bit.
Honestly, it was such a brain, so smart. And she was breaking everything down at the heart. Being more than just a pump, and so much more. It was quite fascinating. I mean, she's a clever cookie. So looking forward to speaking and hearing her talk. Who else have we got?
Dr. Zsófia Klemens from Hungary. She's going to be joining us via Zoom. She can't be there in person, but she's going to be joining via Zoom. And Zsófia is a marvel. I mean, look, all these guys are heroes of mine. Zsófia has an unrivaled track record at her clinic, whatever you want to call it, Paleo Medicina in Hungary. They have reversed almost every horrible metabolic chronic disease that you can think of, including the very worst, including
the big bad C.
The big bad C, that like the glioblastomas, like you know, Andrew's diagnosis. So she's going to be talking about a couple of angles. One, what is so different about the way that they approach restoring health and reversing these conditions. And secondly, how bloody difficult and hard the system makes it for them to get the word out, because there's an incredible amount of resistance out there for the, you know, the true doctors, the true healers, the true scientists. We need to appreciate that the orthodoxy, the mainstream that permeates all of academia, mainstream media, all of that. When there is a threat to the profits, how these entities close ranks. I mean, why am I telling you this? I mean, you're sitting there as a survivor of one of these conflicts. You know, the system turned on you and took you out.
They tried
to take you out.
Mate, they tried using every single fracking bullshit excuse to get rid of me. They used transphobia. And the GMC investigated me and said, no, nothing to see here. Another hospital referred me for inciting hate and, you know, anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish, and suspended me for almost 4 months. I just got an email from the investigation, the outcome of that investigation, and the person who investigated went, I thought Ahmed's podcast was extremely balanced. He showed, you know, compassion for both sides. How many people have looked into the Israel-Palestine thing and have come out of it balanced, showing compassion to both sides and understanding, right? So I'm not guilty of anything. I've not harmed any fracking patient. I've not been rude or horrible to any group of people. I've got nothing but love for humanity. Mm-hmm. But these, the institution, the system, the establishment doesn't like me. Doesn't like me. Because I'm the little kid calling out the emperor with no clothes.
Exactly.
And instead of saying, oh, well done, kid, for telling, they're like, nah, well, how, because it makes them look bad because they're still playing along with the emperor's got no clothes, or they're in it and they're benefiting from the corruption. And they genuinely, some of them maybe think I'm dangerous and I'm a quack. I mean, I don't know. I think it's a combination of all that kind of stuff.
You are dangerous. You're not a quack. But also, you know, anyone listening to this needs to know, yeah, Ahmed, I love you like a brother. You are a beautiful and unique snowflake. But into
snowflake?
maybe snowflake's the wrong word. Yeah, pick a noun. But the point is, there are actually a lot more heroes out there than if you watch the BBC or the mainstream. You're never going to find out about the, you know, the David Cartlands and the Andrew Wakefields of this world. You know, you've spoken to so many of these people. And that's what we're trying to do with the conference. So Zafia, absolutely a hero. And we've got another couple of wonderful guys. So Richard Smith will be talking about how he, I mean, the guy was, he was basically on death row in his late 20s, I think, pre-diabetic, obese, unable to walk up the stairs without stopping for a break.
Mm.
Then went on to be a professional bodybuilder, and now, you know, once he'd finished with that, decided, I know, I'm gonna be like an Ironman biathlete. So now I'm gonna go off and do marathons and you know, cycling and stuff. The guy's an absolute machine. But I mean, so he basically looked at his life and went, I'm staring death in the face at this point. What can I do?
Mm.
And there are so many people out there. So what we want to do is just get as many as we can together in one room and celebrate the heroism. And then I think completing our lineup, Stephen Thomas, great friend, absolute expert in metabolic issues, has studied blood and blood tests. So he's going to be talking about how, again, wonderful, wonderful idea, that how what your doctor doesn't know, what your GP doesn't know about blood results and how that could harm you.
Mm.
And he's going to pull the curtain back on all of that stuff. And so what we want from this is we want everybody to come out of every session at this conference saying, okay, I understand a little bit better how this so-called healthcare system is not set up in my favor, but also there's things that I can take away and I can start to, I'm going to approach this differently. The moment I get home, I feel empowered.
Mm.
That's what we really want. And then, of course, you'll be talking your good self.
Yeah, me. Voila. I mean, and everyone, all of my supporters, I'm going to give you a big hug, just like last time. Everyone there, I'll give you a big hug. So basically, I'm going to talk about navigating the sick care system from my own personal experience as a patient, my family members, and being a consultant and witnessing myself firsthand. It's a minefield. You know, it's not easy navigating the system. And if you don't know how to do it, you could be one of the statistics, and what I mean by that is if you look at the top three, I think the third most common cause of death is now iatrogenic harm by the medical system, death by the medical system. I mean, that's pretty serious, you know, and the number of errors that are taking place is very high. And people need to understand that this idea that you can just go into a hospital or go into a GP practice and think, right, this doctor knows best. This person in white coat is going to take care of me, and I can just switch off and put my life in their hands.
Yeah,
don't do that.
Yeah, and this is all actually part of the agenda in a way. In the 19th century, physicians were barely white collar. You know, that it was a normal job.
Surgeons were barber surgeons.
Yeah.
You know that, yeah. They weren't wearing pinstripe suits and all that kind of stuff.
Which is why you were known as Mr. Malik, not Dr. Malik.
Yep.
Because it's like, oh, call the local butcher, because he was the only person who had the tools. Call Mr. whatever his name is.
Yeah.
You know,
yep,
the butcher,
yep,
to bring in his cleaver and his saw and his very sharp knives, because doctors didn't have the equipment or the knowledge of the anatomy and physiology to do amputations and stuff like that.
Yeah, physicians were mainly bloodletting and giving arsenic and mercury and stuff like that.
Leeches.
You know, it's been good old venae section, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's crazy. I mean, the truth is, if you go back in time and just look at the history of medicine, we've done some really fracked up stuff, like really, really weird stuff, poisoning people, bloodletting, you know, to the point where they're almost dead, you know, and, you know, what else? Trepanning, you know, putting needles up the nose and scrambling the brain, lobectomies, you know, taking a bit of your brain out. I mean, quite recently, giving people cocaine for migraines and, you know, it goes on and on and
mercury,
on.
Mercury vapor for syphilis.
That's it, right?
Inhale this. Be good.
mRNA jab technology, vaccines, you know, with a bit of aluminium and mercury lobbed in there with some fetal parts and, you know, and bits of monkey DNA and whatever. I mean, just complete quackery.
Yeah.
We do it. And even now, you know, things like Ozempic and statins. I mean, I'm sure, look, 100 years from now, people look back and go, God, those people in 2024, they were dumb as anything. Bloody statins. Didn't they understand how important cholesterol was? Like, what the hell had cholesterol got to do with any of this stuff that they're heart attacks or whatever. I mean, they were just a bunch of idiots.
It only forms part of practically the wall of every cell in your body and 3/4 of your hormones.
Right.
It's that important. It's what your skin uses to synthesize vitamin D in the sun.
What your brain needs.
Loads of it.
And why do you get like...
It's the myelin sheaths that prevent some things like, for example, Alzheimer's disease.
Exactly.
So I know. Let's create a pyramid selling structure to sway GPs to feed as many of these things that actually prevent your brain from being able to take up the cholesterol that it needs and thereby causing Alzheimer's.
So it's funny, the whole medical paradigm right now is that, you know, the body malfunctions, does something wrong, produces too much of something or produces too little of something. So we need a drug to block a receptor, block the metabolism, to increase something or whatever, right? It's always about blocking. All the drugs block normal physiological processes. But the problem is, it's that then does affect. You have to wonder, why do we have these physiological processes? And by blocking it, the reason why you get side effects is because of the harms that you're doing then to those normal physiological processes. You have to think about it. Why am I getting migraines? Why am I getting diarrhea? Or why am I getting constipation? Because this drug is acting on something and stopping it from doing its normal function.
But it's okay, because we've got a drug to deal with that particular so-called side effect, which is basically just an effect.
Yeah.
And if there are side effects of drug B, don't worry, because there's drug C. And you end up
in
polypharmacy.
Yeah, don't worry, because now we have those lovely little trays with Monday to Sunday and like 7-8 rows, and you can fill in all your pills and pop them.
Yeah, and then people are walking around rattling with pills for most of their lives.
Do you know, I had to change how I took a history in the last 20 years. I used to say to people, you know, are you normally fit and healthy, blah, blah, blah. And that was part of the past medical history. Have you got any medical conditions or anything? And then the next stage would be drug history. Are you on any medication? I had to change it. And the reason why I'm saying this is because I would say, look, are you normally fit and healthy? Yes, I'm normally fit and healthy. Do you have any medical problems? No, I don't have any medical problems. And are you on any medication? Oh, yeah, I've got some medication. Let me just get the list out. I'm like, and now I'm like, what? Hold on one sec. In my head, I'm like, you just told me you've got no problems. You're fit and healthy. And like, they're getting a list out. Yeah, I'm on Bisoprolol. I'm on Cimetidine. I'm on Lansoprazole. I'm on, you know, this pill, Furosemide. I'm on this ACE inhibitor. I think it's a blue pill. Do you remember what the name is? I can't remember the name. I'm like, oh my God. I'm on codeine. And it would just go down the list. I'm on a statin. I'm on metformin. And I'd be like, I thought you were fit and healthy. I am.
Yeah, I've been on PPIs for 30 years, as we had this week as well. We've had somebody in our group on the Big Fat Challenge just binning the proton pump inhibitors after 30 years.
I mean, there you go. And the problem of these drugs is that once someone gets prescribed a drug, and I think even a lot of the studies or whatever, like the thing is you put them on for 2 months, 3 months or whatever, 6 months. No, what happens is once someone's on, no one ever goes back and checks and goes, oh, you were started this and that. We should stop that now. It's like, okay, we'll just continue, repeat prescription, and you're then on it forever. How many people are de-described, you know, not prescribed, but taken off drugs? How many people have gone to the GP practice and the GP's gone, hey, you're on these drugs for quite a long time. Do you still need this? Can we like start taking these away? I don't think many people go through that. I'm going to be getting a pharmacist on soon, well, in the summer, talking about how they de-describe and get people off drugs that they don't have to. And I think that's really, really important, you know. And just look at PPIs, you know, proton pump inhibitors. See, it's again, blocking inhibitors. And the thing is, you know, acid is bad in your stomach, acid reflux. No, we've got acid in our stomach because it kills all the bacteria and bugs, stops us from getting small intestinal bowel overgrowth, bacterial overgrowth, and keeps our gut sterile and helps metabolize. And we need that acid. And actually, if you get rid of it, that's how you get the reflux and that's how you get all the SIBO and all the other complications. But no, it's all right. It's safe and effective. Take your pill.
Yeah. It's insanity. And going like back full circle to what we were saying at the start, you are the product of thousands of generations who managed not to die of these things. And the people.
What do you mean? Oh my God, you mean 1,000 years ago they weren't taking PPI, statins, and vaccines?
I can only assume they weren't, unless there's some natural statin that you get from a particular flower halfway up a mountain in the Himalayas. I got no idea. Because, and here's the big secret behind all of this, Ahmed. In my personal view, your body is really, really good at homeostasis, of restoring its own natural healthy balance. That is the big secret that they don't want you to know. Right?
I agree.
And then they can sell you vaccines. They can sell you all these drugs that, like, say, interrupt all of these pathways. And those pathways are there, if you believe in evolution and survival of the fittest. Nature's had a long time to work this shit out, and it's come up with a pretty damn good thing, but that's not good for the economy.
It all comes down to money, isn't it? I mean, do you really think the root of all evils is money? Is it as simple as that? Money and control?
Yeah. Well, they say the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. I think money is a part of it, but quite honestly, I think they've pretty much got all the money now. So what they want to do is convert that money into real assets and real control. Because I
was going to say, isn't it also control? They just want that. They want to consolidate that power and that control.
Yeah,
because they've got it, haven't they already?
Yeah, they've got it already. But what they need to do now is to protect their own position, because the 99.99% of us, it's starting to come out. I really do believe this. I think the truth is emerging now, and when enough people, and we're very close to that point in my personal view, and enough people wake up to how badly they're being screwed over, and they go, hang on, then the whole thing is going to come crashing down. And
but it's funny. So I had Jeff Buys Cars on my podcast recently, and he was like, you know, what is that breaking point for people? He goes, when is it going to be enough is enough? He goes, as far as I'm concerned, that was like 3 years ago. Like, the pitchfork should have been out 3 years ago. And I'm like, and Jeff and I were both bamboozled. Like, why is there no outrage? Why are people not absolutely furious as to what's going on and the fact that life is so much harder than it should be? Like, life should not be this unnecessarily hard. The fact that we're having to pay 90% of our earnings, our hard-won labor, is going to the tax man. For what? For what? You know, to pay your mortgage, to pay your rent is so goddamn hard. You know, life shouldn't be like this, that we're doing 2-3 jobs, working day and night. Like, I'm working literally 7 days a week. I believe in the Sabbath. We should, you know, God said we should have a day of rest. I think it makes complete sense, man. It's like that digestion, right? When you eat, you should digest. We should have a day of rest when, you know, we spend time with our family. We love our family. We enjoy their company. We reflect on life. We reflect on the world around us. We are grateful for nature. We're grateful to God, grateful for everything. I'm guilty of now working 7 days a week. I've gone from working 2.5 days a week to working 7 days a week and earning an eighth of what I was earning before and worrying, how am I going to pay the mortgage in 2-3 months time and blah, blah, blah. And have I got any more subscribers? I mean, life shouldn't be like this. I'm a smart guy. I'm an intelligent man. I'm working hard. This podcast is giving value and enjoyment and entertainment to a lot of people. So why am I struggling while the crooks and criminals are flourishing and prospering? It's just wrong. The game is rigged. The game is so badly rigged, and we should all be outraged. And it's like, how bad does it have to get before people say, right, enough is enough, I'm not playing? Because the other thing as well is, if you think about anybody, like whether it be a king or a president or a politician, they've got no power inherently. They only have the power that we give to them.
Exactly. It's all via consent. It's the old paradigm. It's a problem, reaction, solution, the Hegelian dialectic. And we talk about this, the last few chapters of the Red Pill Food Revolution, it's all about what we can do.
Tell me then.
And how we get it. Well, I don't want people to read the book, but I'll give you the short version.
Yeah, just give the short version.
The short version is, it's problem, reaction, solution, PRS, right? And we talk all the way through the book about bullshit. And bullshit being like man's laws that they created to say, for example, rather than we belong on the earth, that this patch of earth belongs to me. Right, and there were reasons for all of this, but that was the invention of bullshit, and there's a whole chapter on the invention of bullshit. But it goes on and goes on throughout the book, and then what we explain later on is, you need to understand this PRS thing, because they are a minority, right? Just like the Wizard of Oz. The Wizard of Oz didn't have the power. The only reason why we believe that these people are in power is because they have caused us to believe that they are in power. They aren't actually in power. Governments and politicians are here for one reason, in reality, which is to administer the common shared assets of the state. That's it. They are here as public servants. They should be here as public servants. They're not in power, and they don't have the right to govern or rule us, only by consent. But so they create the problems. They create the problems. They say, for example, let's just pull out a random thing. There's a global pandemic, for example. Or we're all going to drown due to man-made climate change, for example. Or cow farts are going to choke the entire planet. Despite the fact that we've had ruminants on Earth for around 55 million years, and the Earth didn't choke itself to death with cow farts before that time. But, you know, there you go. these people are all here for our benefit. So all of these issues, and notice also that in the last few generations, all of these big problems that they've served up for us, they have some weird characteristics in common. They're global. They don't respect borders, and they're invisible, right? The nuclear threat. That was the big one when I was a kid. Mm. We had the threat of nuclear Armageddon in the early 80s. Then we had AIDS. And that was going to wipe everybody out. We had Zika virus. We've had, you know, all of these.
Ebola.
All of these pandemics. And then, of course, climate. Oh, sorry. In the 70s, the big fear was an imminent ice age. Mm. But then it was global warming. But now they've revised global warming. They've rebranded it as climate change. Because.
As if the climate doesn't change on a daily basis.
I've got a whole talk on this. The climate has never stopped changing. It goes up and down sharply and has done forever.
Yeah.
And it's in the short and medium term, it's driven by, in fact, no, complete. In the short term, it's driven by solar activity in terms of solar storms, solar flares. And other than that, in the medium and long term, it's driven by the angle of dangle of the Earth in relation to the sun.
Mm.
And it follows very strict patterns, and it always has done, and it always will. And the climate goes up and down, and that's just the way of things. But, you know, they've managed to give us these problems that are intangible, invisible, and global. And then they tell us governments are failing to address the very real problems that we face. And you've got, you know, people like so-called King Charles and Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab, you know, Greta, bless her little cotton socks, getting up there and telling us. And Greta says, I don't want you to be concerned. I want you to panic. I want you to act as if the house is on fire. Because when people stop, when people go into fear, they stop thinking. You go into your reptilian brain, you fight or flight. That they want us to stop thinking. But here's the way to think about it. All the problems are there, right? They create the problems. And if you turn your TV off, guess what happens to the problems?
They disappear.
Find it out for yourself. Do it. Do an experiment, right? The solutions. Governments aren't up to the job. We need more government and more technology. That's what we need. And it's going to be global. Like for some kind of, I don't know, how would you describe it? Some kind of new world order? That is clearly the only rational solution to all of these terrible problems that are going to wipe us all out. But guess what? At the core of this pantomime, the whole thing is an audience participation exercise. PRS, problem they create, solutions they offer. But we have to go to them on our knees with our hands held out saying, we need your help. Please, Mr. Schwab, come to our rescue, right? The reaction. And that, to everyone who's listening, that is the audience participation part. And if we do not react in the way that they are telling us we must react, guess what? The whole thing goes away. The whole thing goes away. All we have to do is just not react. We say, okay, we see the narrative. Thank you very much. We don't buy it. We're going to crack on with our lives, and we're going to create a new world where we exist for the, instead of profit, we're going to put value on things like beauty, joy, cooperation, good food, good family life, all of these things that everybody, every mother's son knows in their heart that is what really matters in life. It's not profits, and it's not fear. And we're not going to live in that world anymore. And guess what? You know, like you said, it's time for the pitchforks to come out 3 years ago. Depending on who you listen to, if you listen to the BBC, there were 20,000 or so nutters walking through London at one point protesting about it. You listen to other sources, there were a million. Right? Now, I don't know the reality.
I was on the streets.
Yeah.
Admit, I can tell you right now, I was protesting against the mandates. And I... It wasn't 20,000. And anyone who was out there in the marches, it was a wonderful feel. It was so nice. Families out there. We went right past BBC House. And it was just thousands upon thousands, you know, easily hundreds of thousands, okay? And guess what? Later that day, nothing on the news.
Nothing.
And it was, and that was when I, you know, cemented for me 100% that the television box, there's a reason why that picture is up there. With the cow labeled BBC on it, you know, literally shitting into someone's face as they sit on a sofa watching their backside. Because watching the BBC is like literally having a cow shit on your face. It's full of garbage and they lied to you. And yeah, okay, you know what? Yeah, there's a bit of truth. Yes, there's a bit of honest entertainment. But you know what? The best lie is one that's coated in layers of truth. So, you know, 90% of what you see on the BBC might be benign and harmless, but then 10% of it is pure, sinister propaganda, deceit.
But that's how bullshit works. We talk about this in the food book as well. That's how bullshit works. If you want to get somebody to swallow bullshit, you have to serve it up in a sandwich. It goes truth, lies, truth.
That's it. This is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And this has been twas ever thus. This has been going on forever. Guys, Machiavelli wrote a book on it.
Really?
Machiavelli wrote a book called The Prince.
How long ago is that? 300-400 years?
Yeah, which is basically the psychopath's manual. And
what was the name of the book?
It's called The Prince. And it was how to get power and hang on to it. And we quote Machiavelli, we quote Goebbels, we quote all of these guys, Schwab and Henry Kissinger and stuff. It's a model that's been working for them from since time began.
Published in 1532, The Prince is a 16th century political treatise written by Italian diplomat, philosopher, and political theorist Niccolo Machiavelli in the form of a realistic instruction guide for new princes. The main idea of The Prince is for a ruler, and we've got a lot of these people ruling over us, unfortunately, the end justifies the means. Machiavelli argued that rulers should strive to maintain or expand their position, even if immoral acts are necessary to accomplish that goal. You know what? I'm so naive. This is the first time I think I've properly, truly understood Machiavellian.
Yes.
It basically, this basically is what the predator class wants to do.
And
they will justify whatever it takes, death, famine, misery, war, to maintain their power and their control. These Machiavellian people are evil mother.
Well, it's more than Machiavellian, because there's this concept of the psychology called the dark triad, which, you know, depending on who you listen to, makes somebody a psychopath. So psychopaths have these three traits. They lack empathy. They are willing to manipulate others, which is what they call Machiavellianism, right? They will stop at anything. And then thirdly, they have a hyper-inflated sense of their own importance and value in the world. That's what makes somebody a psychopath. We talk about the evolution of the psychopath in the book as well, because it all came when
I'm going to read this book now.
It's yours, mate.
You need to sign it.
It's wonderful. Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure, 100%. No.
To Ahmed, with love.
Book. Writing this book changed my life and changed all of us. You know, all the, you know, the authors who contributed to it. It was a life-changing experience. If you do nothing else, go out and buy the book. It's available in all your favorite demonic online bookstores and elsewhere.
I mean, just some of the chapter names are just fantastic. So, for example, Revolution Part 2 about your health. But before that, you know, you talk about the war on your mind, you know, the revolution on your mind. Yep. It talks about when tyranny becomes law.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the one, I want you to talk about, like, the real atrocity and the war on meat. You know, can I ask you something? You know, I talk about the fact that there's not enough people with the pitchforks and the outrage, and this, like, I just feel like a lot of people are just living in zombie land. And like, I'm like, where's the outrage? Like, what the frack, man? Like, the government recently just got you to lock down, you know, shut down your schools, hold back your children's development for years, potentially forever, cause an epidemic of mental health problems, an epidemic of health problems because they weren't identified or treated. And
what about all the newborns that didn't see a smile for the first 6 months of their life?
Right, masking up. They destroyed small businesses and medium businesses, wrecked marriages and families and homes, increase in domestic abuse, made you take an experimental shot.
Yeah.
Made you get your kids to take an experimental shot. God knows what effect it's going to have on their fertility and their future life. And you've got no outrage. You don't feel anything. You don't feel even a little bit duped or upset. Like, where is it? Partly like the society's dumbed us down, but also food has dumbed us down. If we eat like the garbage they eat, they force us to eat. Do we become more passive? Do we become more sheep-like? Mm-hmm. I mean, is there an element of if you eat meat, you're a bit more in you?
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. You eat meat, and you are your brain simply works, but your brain doesn't shrink for one thing. And we talk about that in the book. But they knew. Go back to ancient.
No, hold on one second. So what? Eating these you're saying all these vegans and vegetarians have got smaller brains?
Yes,
that's quite controversial, mate.
No, it's not. It's a fact. There's a study came out in 2011.
There's a lot of vegans and vegetarians listening right now going to get very upset.
Okay, vegans and vegetarians, if you're listening now, listen up. Study came out in 2011. The study was actually on the effects of vitamin B12. They took a bunch of people over the age of 60 who were in several institutions in North America. They scanned their brains to estimate the volume of their brains at the start and at the end of the study, and they monitored their diet. A post-hoc analysis of the data, and there's a talk, I think, by Barry Groves, where he goes into this, post-hoc analysis revealed some very interesting things that weren't actually related to vitamin B12, which is two things. One is, at the start of the study, the brain of every single subject in the study who refrained from eating animal products was smaller in volume than the brains of every participant in the study whose diet included animal products. Okay. In other words, at the start of the study, the brains of all the vegans were smaller than the brains of all the omnivores. That's at the start. Furthermore, because they tracked their brain volume throughout the study, those who refrained from eating any animal products, because they were missing the DHA and the EPA and the, you know, some of the cholesterol and whatever, maybe they lost 1% of their brain volume per year, every year throughout the study. Your brain literally shrinks if you did not feed it the right fatty acids.
So, but can't they supplement it with other, like a lot of vegetarians and vegans say you just have to eat properly. You just don't eat the processed junk. If you eat the right types of food, you're just fine and you're very healthy. I mean, look, there's people like Barbara O'Neill. She's a vegetarian.
Vegetarians can have obviously dairy and eggs. Eggs are almost complete food. Dairy is almost complete food. They're not perfect, but they're pretty close. But when it comes to DHA, docosahexaenoic acid, and in particular, there's no really good source of that from the entire plant kingdom other than marine algae. And I can guarantee that our prehistoric ancestors were not harvesting marine algae to get their DHA and their EPA. And the EPA is extremely important for the functioning of your nervous system as well. But yeah. Bottom line is it's very, very hard, very challenging to maintain your brain size and therefore to maintain your mental performance. But what we find is that when people are on a ketogenic or carnivore, I mean, Ahmed, people have known for over 100 years that a ketogenic diet is the number one most effective treatment for epilepsy, for example.
No, I mean, I know that. I've spoken to Dr. Rachel Brown, consultant psychiatrist, and she talks about the importance of, you know, keto diet, or even she's actually carnivore, and she goes, you can treat a lot of mental health problems from this. And I'm just wondering whether this drive to this war on meat has created fundamental problems in society, you know, like just so, I mean, there's so many attack venues, like avenues. So, you know, I had Dr. Anthony J talking about estrogen, like chemicals and how they're affecting people. And I'm just wondering whether the whole transgender, non-binary, this whole just passive, but also aggressive, you know, triggering, you know, like you're very passive and then you get triggered, you know, this kind of like really weird behavior, whether it's being driven by the foods and the chemicals and, you know.
Food is a big part of it, 100%, because really what they're telling us is food. Most of what people eat today, about 70% is ultra processed, which means it comes, like you mentioned this earlier on, five basic ingredients: soy, wheat, corn, seed oils, and sugar. And they get these things because they're cheap as hell to grow. They transport easily. They pump them into factories. They come through machines and they spit out millions of things that all follow the same pattern that they can then patent and own the intellectual property for and then sell to you as food. Things like, you know, Oreos and Twinkies and, you know, it's coming out of our ears. 70% of what Americans eat today is ultra processed, which means it ain't actually food anyway. A better description of these things would be that they are legalized recreational drugs because they're designed to be addictive. And when you are addicted, then you're not thinking straight.
All right. Can I ask you something? We need to wrap up soon. Top three health tips for people listening.
Top three health tips. Number one is diet. And sorry, vegetarians, sorry, vegans, eat like a human. And, so buy the Red Pill Food Revolution, read it. It will explain it all. But, 95% of human existence before the end of the last ice age and before we started farming, we got the majority of our nutrition from large prey. That is how we became human. That is how we've lived for the majority of our life. If you compress the whole of human, the lifespan of our species, Homo sapiens, into 1 year, we've been farming for 2 weeks, right? At the outset, right? So that's like 10,000 years in what used to be called the Fertile Crescent, which is now Egypt, Palestine, Israel, Syria, Iraq, things that you wouldn't normally think of as green and pleasant lands, but that's another story, which is explained in the book. So 10,000 years at the longest. Do you know how long we've been farming crops in England? 2,000 years. Julius Caesar saw the introduction of farming. Where you come from, Scotland, they've only had agriculture for 1,500 years. Right. This is very, very recent. So that is basically lunchtime on New Year's Eve. The Scots have been farming. So there's no whiskey before then. Okay. So that's number one, food. Nourish your body properly. Meat isn't magical. It just gives your body everything it needs and nothing it doesn't. Meat and fat. Okay. So number one. Number two, I would probably say, relax and don't worry. Because like you said,
my daughter talked about stress being a bad thing recently.
The fear of cancer kills people. When the cancer diagnoses kill people, I believe this. We know that stress, long-term elevated chronic cortisol, we know that that contributes to gut permeability and inflammation via perforated gut or your leaky gut drives the majority of the chronic illnesses, which, by the way, are now killing most people and also didn't exist 150 years ago, right? So that's number two. Number three, you've got to wake up and just decide for yourself, I'm going to figure out what works for me and I'm going to stop listening to the white coats. Yeah, it's that simple.
I love it. Dude, I love it. Right, listen, you're on your deathbed, my friend. You've lived well over 100.
I knew this was coming.
Surrounded by your family and loved ones, before you meet your maker, what advice are you going to give them?
Love each other. But more than that, yeah. I love the New Testament quote, love your neighbor as yourself. You've got this. You've got this. You are incredible. Never forget that. And I think if you really get that in your heart and your soul, everything else just falls out naturally.
Yeah, I agree. Can I tell you something? I was thinking about this. And I don't know. Wait, I'm just going to pull it up for a second. Hold on a second. Just trying to find this image. Just found it. Here we go. So I think, you just quoted that thing at the Bible. I mean, I think just, we don't need all the laws and rules in this world if we just follow the Ten Commandments. You could get rid of all the shit, all the legislation, all the acts, all the bullshit. Look, thou shalt have no other gods before me.
La ilaha illallah.
Right? So basically, yeah.
Yes, the fundamental Muslim statement of faith.
Yeah. So like basically, and these other gods, these false idols are everywhere. It's money, it's your phone, it's
celebrities,
wealth, celebrities, the holy vaccine. I mean, they're everywhere. These false idols are everywhere. Just don't have anyone. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. Thou shalt not take the name of thy Lord, thy God, in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. You know, we need a day of rest, man. We even rest the fields, don't we? We have a fallow field. Just we need to rest.
Which is also in the Old Testament as well.
Yeah. Honor thy father and thy mother. That's nice. Don't stick them in a nursing home and just wait for them to die so you can take their property or whatever. Thou shalt not kill. Yeah. You know what? Don't do that. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Yeah. Don't do that. Do you know the number of people I know that do that? A lot. It's almost like normal. Like they just think it's like, yeah, happens, shit happens.
Because they haven't got love.
They haven't got love.
That's all it is.
I mean, people in open relationships. Yeah, we're married, but we're in an open relationship. What that?
I don't get it.
I don't get it. I don't get
it. If it works for you, it floats your boat, whatever. But
that tells me they're lacking something. Yeah, I love my wife. I adore her. I was telling her the other day, I think I love you more every single fracking day. And she feels the same about me. And it's like, that's nice, man. That's nurturing for the soul. It's just, it's good for you. It's healthy. Thou shalt not steal. Yeah, you know what? And to me, it's not just physical property. It's also stealing your health, stealing someone's wealth, stealing someone's truth.
And their liberty.
Their liberty. Don't steal their liberty. Don't steal their freedom. Just don't steal. And there's lots of different ways of stealing things. Don't steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. I don't do that. And thou shalt not covet. Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that, any of this shit. Just don't do any of this fracking stuff. And you know what? If you follow the Ten Commandments, I mean, the world would be a pretty good damn place.
I'm with you, bro.
Right. Where can people sign up for this conference? Where is it? Because I've got listeners all around the world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they might be like, and, you know, is it online? Can they, you know, access it? Like, what's the situation? Then we wrap up.
Okay. So to find out more, just go to thebigfatchallenge.com or thebigfatchallenge.com/events. And you'll get the details there. It is right smack in the middle of England. It's in the Peak District. It's a beautiful part of the world. And it's on Easter weekend. So it's March 30th and 31st, Easter Saturday and Easter Sunday. You can stay at the location. We've got loads and loads of good food being served, more food and better than last time as well. You'll be very pleased to hear. I mean, in January, we had one day. Now it's bigger. Now it's better. We've got more speakers, more talks, more breaks, more Q&A, more hugs for everyone involved. And we're going to have a bonus session on Friday for anyone who can turn up on Friday afternoon. We're going to have a circle. Everyone sit down. We want to hear from the tribe, from the gathering that is there. What have you learned? What have you discovered in your life about how we can heal and be healthy as well? Because that's something so, so important as well. So yeah, it's going to be amazing. And yeah, you can join the Big Fat Challenge there as well, which is our kind of, you know, our lifestyle coaching. And if you want to get hold of the Red Pill Food Revolution, just type in the Red Pill Food Revolution into your favorite online bookstore and you'll find it.
Okay, wonderful. Well, before we end, I've not had many people to thank recently. I've only got a trickle of subscribers recently. I had a flurry around January when, you know, shit was hitting the fan. But folks, I just want to say thank you, Claire, for subscribing. Claire, Healthy Influence. I'd like to say thank you to Bias. I'd also like to say thank you to Chrissy Smith. And I'd like to say thank you to Mark Hayden. Buddy, thank you so much. And Jane Jackson. And Stephen Mastralia. Yeah, you're somewhere in America, I believe. But listen, thank you so much, all of you, for subscribing to my show and supporting me. I think £5 a month to stand up for freedom and fight against tyranny is a great, great deal. And you're getting lots of free content. And, you know, just if you can, just dig deep, buddies, and support me. Because without you, I can't do this. All right, folks. Thank you so much. Ben?
It's been a privilege, man. Thank you.
No, seriously, thank you so much for coming. And, you know, people need to know that you've actually driven 6 hours. Well, you will have driven 6 hours to come down and then go back up. So, dude, I really appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Well, it's human contact, isn't it? There's no substitute. Oh, by the way, to answer your question from earlier, it's not being streamed. It's not being recorded. There's only one way to get the information from this conference, and that's to be in the room. So if you can possibly make it, guys, make it. Ahmed and I are giving out free hugs all weekend. I've never had so many hugs as we had at the last War on Health. It's going to be even better this time. I can't wait.
I really liked it. It was amazing. All right. God bless. Bye-bye.